Good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, December 20th, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday, everyone. It is 20 degrees and pretty gray and cloudy here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show 21st Century Cures, Neuromonitoring, Tracking Devices, AI, and Pre-Crime. And yes, this is for real. There were some provisions in the 21st Century Cures Act that was inked last week by Obama that had discussed neural monitoring of people diagnosed with neurological diseases. And one of the disturbing factors about this diagnosis of neurological diseases is that they are looking at turning the DSM that people have complained about for so long on its head, to be able to come up with new quantitative ways to identify disease. Disease is not black and white. In a book, they say, good old Tommy Insel, former director of the National Institute of Mental Health, who has gone over to Google's Verily division to work on mental health issues and is looking to use your voice to diagnose you with smartphone apps. Yep. That Tommy Insel. Well, they now have a provision in the new law that was inked, Section 399S, Surveillance of Neurological Diseases. In general, the secretary, acting through the director of the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention, and in coordination with other agencies, as the secretary determines, shall, as appropriate, enhance and expand infrastructure and activities to track the epidemiology of neurological diseases and incorporate information obtained through such activities into an integrated surveillance system, which may consist of or include registry to be known as the National Neurological Conditions Surveillance System. This is now a law. We continued on to take a look at this bill that is, I think we discovered, hold on, let it load, at the end of it yesterday that it had passed the Senate. It was received on December 8th, the same day that the 21st Century Cures Act was pushed to the president's desk. But this H.R. 4919 had formerly been called the Alzheimer's Disease Patient Alert Program Authorization within the Violent Crime Control and Law Enforcement Act of 1994. And they have now changed the title of this, so it is no longer the Alzheimer's Disease Patient Alert Program, but it is the Missing Americans Alert Program. And within this program, of course, they talk about Nana and Johnny. Nana with her dementia and Johnny with autism that accidentally wander off and get injured or injure others. So they're going to give you a non-invasive way to be able to track your loved ones. And of course, at the very end, they tell you that it is not mandatory, wink, yet. But that is a new, unintrusive way. They do specifically state that it will not include implants at this time. Don't worry about that. You could suck them up your nose. You know, read a lot about nanobots and nanotechnology, and you will start to find out, and we discovered this a while back, that there are two best ways to get nanotechnology into the body, and the key is to get it into the bloodstream so it can travel to the brain. One way is through your gut to be absorbed into the small intestines. And of course, if you have been a victim of glyphosate and GMO foods over the years and ended up with all kinds of different digestive issues, including leaky gut syndrome, that allows improperly processed nutrients to pass directly into the bloodstream, or through the blood-brain barrier that is directly accessed through the nose. They've discovered that those are the most efficient pathways to get some of these newfangled technologies into our bodies and take a look at some of the stuff that Kurzweil has said. Their goal is to be able to get us connected 24/7. He has even said it, little nanobots connected to our neocortex. From everything that we have researched here, I would have to say that in our not-too-distant future, with this straight upward curve of technology that we are experiencing right now, this is not impossible in any way, shape, or form. But anyway, as part of this violent crime control and law enforcement act, they have now included Nana and little Johnny with mental deficiencies to be ripe for tracking technologies, non-invasive and non-permanent tracking technologies, all under the guise of the Attorney General. And that Attorney General is going to give access to all the local law enforcement agencies, as well as the state, as well as the local governments, for the prevention, detection, investigation, or prosecution of any criminal law. They also talk about how they're going to have the ability to enforce the rights of the state for a tracking device over the objection of an individual. Now, of course, this is if your family determines that you require one to aid them in your care and for your own safety. Now, this is extremely disturbing. This passed the House of Representatives on December 8th. So hold on one second. That's what it says at the bottom. And I believe that this is now, received in the Senate December 8th, 2016. So it's gone through the House. It is now in the Senate. So they are now on Christmas vacation. This is also called the Kevin and Avanti's Law of 2016, H.R. 4919. But they give it another sub-name titled Missing Americans Alert Program Act of 2016 to track people who, of course, are a danger to themselves or others. We found out also, we discussed a few times, some of these new wearables. I told you it was going to be like the Fitbit. That was kind of the first rollout of getting you used to being tracked, having them know what your biostatistics are at any present time. There's an ECG monitor that can now track your emotions as well. And as they are digging up more and more mysteries of the brain through the Brain Initiative, which kicked off in April 2013, Obama announced the Brain Initiative is a bold new initiative focused on revolutionizing our understanding of the human brain. And if they can crack that nut on how to manipulate emotion, how to read thoughts, we've read about that, how to re-engineer the brain in a synthetic format that they can then apply deep learning and layered technologies that they've been tinkering with in the lab for a very long time. Once they have a synthetic brain, that is going to be the next step to some of this insanity that Kurzweil has been prattling on about for many years, and that is to be able to upload ourselves. Remember, download Nana at Christmas time from the cloud into her avatar. She can be younger and younger every year. You could have Nana from the 70s this Christmas, Nana from the 90s for your birthday, because it was a fun Nana time. For $29.95 Christmas special. I mean, the future does not look rosy. This looks like every dystopian novel that warned about this. I have to say, I hit Amazon last night. Hammy had made a suggestion about looking up banned books. And I was like, you know, I had been looking to get a copy of 1984 and Brave New World for my household. And I started digging in, and there's some good ones out there. Fahrenheit 451 is another good one. I don't remember what else I picked, but I think I'm going to get some of the old classics. Get some Isaac Asimov. There was another one that I found. I don't remember what the title was. But anyway, back to this brain initiative. So this is this entire PSYOP. Of course, the fake news all ties into this. This authorized propaganda that is about ready to be inked, to be played on us, the American people. Countering the Disinformation Propaganda Act to make certain that you don't know what's real anymore and what's not. And as they start learning how to create and remove memories, and remember that stuff that they've been working on with DARPA's dollars sprinkled around at different medical facilities as well as universities, there have been some recent announcements. We found out they can also read dreams, they can suck your thoughts right out of your head. So let's take a listen. We're going to see if this works. Hold on. Let's take a listen to Obama announcing funding and all the reasons why the Brain Initiative is so damn important. This will give you chills now knowing what we know and now knowing that the 21st Century Cures Act is the rotten cherry that was just put on top of not only the Brain Project, but also the Genome Project and all these synthetic biology things that are going on, CRISPRing, artificial intelligence. This is like the disruptive technologies rotten cherry. The robots that are all going to come take our jobs. This is going to be the big Skynet in the end that is running the show. All right, here it goes. Talk about prophetic.
There's this enormous mystery waiting to be unlocked. And the Brain Initiative will change that by giving scientists the tools they need to get a dynamic picture of the brain in action and better understand how we think and how we learn and how we remember. In the budget I will send to Congress next week, I will propose a significant investment by the National Institutes of Health, DARPA, and the National Science Foundation to help get this project off the ground. We can't afford to miss these opportunities while the rest of the world races ahead. We have to seize them. I don't want the next job-creating discoveries to happen in China or India or Germany.
Ding.
It'll happen right here in the United States of America. And that's part of what this Brain Initiative's about. Imagine if no family had to feel helpless watching a loved one disappear behind the mask of Parkinson's or struggle in the grip of epilepsy. Imagine if we could reverse traumatic brain injury or PTSD for our veterans who are coming home.
Ding.
I don't want our children or grandchildren to look back on this day and wish we had done more to keep America at the cutting edge. I want them to look back and be proud that we took some risks, that we seized this opportunity. That's what the American story is about. That's who we are. That's why this Brain Initiative is so important. And if we keep taking bold steps like the one we're talking about to learn about the brain,
Ding.
Confident America will continue to lead the world in the next frontiers of human understanding.
Yes, the next frontiers of human understanding, being able to understand all the secrets of the brain, how to manipulate those secrets, how to insert and remove memories, all in the name of not only keeping you safe, but curing your loved ones, curing PTSD. That was always a big one that DARPA had used as their justification for human experimentation. You know, it was the people who were willing to step up, the people who had no other hope of being cured, who were very happy to offer themselves up to the machine. Well, it has gotten to the point now where all of us have become the guinea pigs. The 21st Century Cures Act was a complete and utter handoff of the people of the world to biotech. We had discovered biotech stocks are going crazy right now. And the New York Times had titled a story that it kind of looked at the same angle we had, racing that R&D line item budget going direct from manufacturer to consumer with less rigorous FDA testing or certification. And remember, the FDA wasn't doing a good job to begin with. How many times have we seen Did your loved one get injured from this drug? Call us now. We can sue them. I mean, there were issues already before, but let's just get that pesky FDA out of the way and spur 21st century innovation. Step right up to be the guinea pig. Give us your information. Become part of the All of Us program, FKA, the Precision Medicine Initiative cohort program. So here now, we at the whitehouse.gov/brain. Tells you all about the Brain Initiative and its launch. We also have the National Institute of Health. Of course, they were listed as one of the key players in this Brain Initiative. They have a homepage as well, braininitiative.nih.gov. Why is now the right time for the Brain Initiative? Well, in the last decade alone, scientists made a number of landmark discoveries that now create the opportunity to unlock the mysteries of the brain, our last bastion of freedom. The actual one place that makes us who we are. We had read a story a few months back that scientists at MIT or Harvard or one of those high-end Ivy League-esque East Coast colleges had announced that they thought they found the seat of actual consciousness. This is kind of frightening, people. Once they can go in and manipulate our memories and zippity-zap our neurons and our different nerves. I mean, that ElectRx program from DARPA talked all about being able to use electrical impulses in different frequencies to hit that vagus nerve. And one of the contact points of that vagus nerve is right next to your ear. But that nerve connects all your body's major systems from the brain down to the gut. And they think that that is one of the communication pathways that our gut bacteria, that we don't give enough credence to, has a direct connect to our brains and a direct influence on our moods, on our health. They are actually tapping that direct connection to work on living therapeutics. Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has invested in some of that out of MIT. And I just saw something about GlaxoSmithKline now introducing their big electrical medicine initiative as well. This is going to be Star Trek, baby. I think it's really coming. But this is a very scary thought because there is a lot of unknown. This is all uncharted territory. And you and I and our kids and our grandkids are all going to be the very first generation. Just like we're the first generation to see all this technology that's brought us to where we are today. Seeing the first computers, the first video games, Pong, even the Commodore 64. And this has gotten us to this point, this connection to the Internet of Things, soon to be the Internet of Everything, fully connected globe in a cobweb where everything is dashboarded and monitored with our brains being one of them. Per the 21st Century Cures Act, Section 399S, Surveillance of Neurological Diseases. All right, let's get back to this. So why is now the right time for the Brain Initiative? We have witnessed the sequencing of the human genome, the development of new tools for mapping neuronal connections, the increasing resolution of imaging technologies, and yes, brain scan databases, and the explosion of nanoscience. John Hopkins University, that's what it is, had the brain database. Nanoscience, of course, is at MIT, the original home of Eric Drexler. These discoveries have yielded unprecedented opportunities for integration across scientific fields, i.e. the merging of man and machine. For instance, the combining advanced genetic and optical techniques Scientists can now use pulses of light, and we talked about this. This originally started out with optogenetics from experiments DARPA was doing. We can now use pulses of light in animal models to determine how specific cell activities within the brain affect behavior. And what is more, through the integration of neuroscience and physics, researchers can now use high-resolution imaging technologies to observe how the brain is structurally and functionally connected in living humans. You guys remember that New Zealander guy that had won, I don't know, some big film awards for his back-ending creation of the avatars in the movie Avatar. And he is now on to a new project on his own. And he's also a neuroscientist, if I believe, on the side. But he does stuff for Hollywood. But his big forte is creating full-blown 3D immersive interactive models online of human anatomy. And then he's built deep learning and AI algorithms. And I'd have to say, from what I saw myself, it looked like it was probably already self-learning into this 3D synthetic, fully anatomically correct human on the computer screen. It was a baby. I don't remember what it's called, X-baby or something like that. And it could interact with the person on the other side of the screen, utilizing the camera's eyes and the microphone as ears. Remember, we were talking about giving artificial intelligence the five senses. And this AI avatar baby was able to learn. And you could show it a picture in a book, and it could tell you what that picture was, and it learned what those pictures were through the doctor teaching the baby what those pictures were. It's a very, very frightening thought. So as they are conquering all of the mysteries of the brain, we have tons of funding going on right now. And this 21st Century Cures Act is going to further that along. There's this entire mental disease portion. They're not only going to work on being able to surveil mental diseases and being able to identify mental diseases utilizing smart devices such as our phones, biosensors that not only can detect illness and can do quick on the spot diagnostics with a little bit of spit, a little bit of urine, a little bit of eyeball juice, a little bit of blood. They can use your vocal diagnostics for not only your brain, but for your body as well. They are looking into your speech patterns. They are utilizing artificial intelligence to analyze them in high speed, comparing them to others in a database and finding correlations that humans never saw before. They're doing that in cancer as well. Good old Dr. Watson, working with 20-plus oncology departments, including with the VA. So now, this is going to be part of 2017, bringing the cost of healthcare down, consolidating, being able to take care of everyone. 21st century medicine across the globe, all in the name of national security, to be able to surveil everything so we don't have any surprises. There's some new stories that came out that kind of further along this brain initiative. We have read about this one, reconditioning the brain to overcome fear. Researchers have discovered a way to remove specific fears from the brain. And of course, this all began as DARPA research in the name of being able to cure soldiers that have seen the horrors of war that they have put them into. Researchers have discovered a way to remove specific fears from the brain using a combination of artificial intelligence and brand new high-resolution brain scanning technology. Their technique could lead to a new way of treating patients with conditions, and not only treating, but we found out monitoring, with conditions such as post-traumatic stress disorder and phobias. There was another one that came out, a big think. We read about this a while ago as well. But I discussed big think. It's one of those more mainstream publications. Lots of big, pretty, colorful pictures and big words. So it tends to get the attention of people who don't typically read about brain research with small, little, tiny letters you got to squint at. Scientists discover how to implant false memories, June 15th, 2016, out of Big Think. MIT researchers Steve Ramirez and Z. Liu recently made history when they successfully implanted a false memory into the mind of a mouse. And the proof was a simple reaction from the rodents, but the implications are vast. They placed the furry little creature inside of a metal box and it froze, displaying a distinct fear response. The mouse was reacting as if it had received an electrical shock there, when it hadn't at all. What makes it more riveting is that their success was considered a long shot. The hypothesis was that not only could they identify those neurons associated with encoding memory, but could essentially rewrite one. Experts say that this is an impressive feat which helps uncover more of the mystery of how the memory operates. And though neuroscientists have considered such a possibility for years, they never thought this kind of experiment could actually work. Surprise! I mean, this is just horrifying. So now take that a step further. We read a story right at the end of the show yesterday out of Quartz Magazine, QZ.com. The disturbingly accurate brain science that identifies potential criminals while they are still toddlers. These were children about the age of 3 years old. Scientists are able to use brain tests on three-year-olds to determine which children are more likely to grow up to become criminals. I mean, talk about just off the chart insane. Minority Report come to life, an uncomfortable idea presenting myriad ethical concerns. And I mean, this has kind of been one of our big red buttons about all this technology. I mean, I come from 25 years in technology, and I have bought into this machine until I had a child and really started digging into what was going on, not just with technology. That was a while afterward. We started to see this whole technocratic web that was forming, and all these connections between the big boys in the tech world, the feds, the NSA, the surveillance, the backdoors, the bendovers, the handing over the backdoor keys, all in the name of lawsuits going away. And then the step right up, life sciences divisions. We saw just the other day, one of the big money makers for the 21st century is going to be life sciences. Curing diseases, healthcare, you and me, Jenny. We are going to be the money shot. And all this stuff will be tested on us. And then the new marketing department will spin a case study and say how great it was. Sell your cure to the masses. You become a poster boy. Anyway, back to this being able to rate three-year-olds to tell if they're going to be potential criminals. They said that 20% of the children at age three go on, typically, statistically speaking, to commit more than 80% of all the crimes as adults. And the way they're going to spin this is that the numbers show that in a population, typically that same 20% are the ones that go after the welfare benefits, that go spend nights in the hospital and jack up the rates on healthcare. The reason why you're paying through the nose this year, Johnny. And of course, a large majority of the fatherless child rearing. So let's point to them as the problems in our social structure breaking down. Let's try to weed these guys out before they become problem children. Let's put them through our special program of neural reconditioning. I mean, we're already talking about neural reconditioning to get rid of fear. Don't be afraid of the nanobots, Johnny. We're also talking about identifying new ways of identifying mental disease, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, psychosis, all through your voice patterns. They are working on a bill to allow the government to physically have a device to be able to track you if you are considered to have a neurological disorder such as dementia or autism, or, like I said yesterday, an ever-growing and morphing list on a spectrum. This new way that they're going to define mental illness, it'll be anybody's definition as to who will require monitoring. We ended the show with a headline yesterday. Our brain activity could be nudged to make healthier choices, healthier for you, healthier for Nana. Not just healthy by putting food in your mouth, but healthy as in maybe not drinking to excess. We're not reaching for those Cheetos. Yeah, so let's listen to this. This is out of Berkeley News from UC Berkeley. Another one from June 2016. Netflix binge watching versus a hike in the woods. A cheeseburger versus a kale salad. Fentanyl versus Tylenol. A new UC Berkeley research project suggests that our brain could be influenced to make healthier choices. In recording moment-to-moment deliberations by mock monkeys over which option is likely to yield the most fruit juice. Of course, they were doing monkey experiments. UC Berkeley scientists have captured the dynamics of decision-making down to millisecond changes in neurons in the brain's orbital frontal cortex. Now, ding, 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 ding. The orbital frontal cortex is that one place that I've warned you about with any type of wearable that goes into the eyeball or even gets anywhere near your eyeball, i.e. Google Glass or Google Contact Lens. I think Sony actually had one as well that they were working on, maybe Samsung, one of them. And of course, we're going to do it to diagnose and treat, be able to monitor your diabetes or your glaucoma. They have, one of the digital camera companies had a digital camera as well as digital video through your blinky blink contacts. They were talking at one time to be able to integrate real-time sunglasses, integrate the ability to see in infrared. I guarantee you that they have stuff already like that for the military. But your eyeball has a big optic nerve, and that optic nerve connects to a big section of your brain. That's called the orbital frontal cortex. The orbital frontal cortex. It's right behind your eyeballs. We read another story a while back that it talked about that same area of the brain, and they were able to scan it with some fMRI, HD fMRI, to see real-time decision-making being made, to watch us make decisions in our brain. So it wasn't just Mac monkeys, like it said in here. These findings, so beware, anything that gets near your eyeball is a direct connect to the brain. We don't want them to get that connection. These findings reported this week in the Journal of Nature Neuroscience shed new light on the internal decision-making process, particularly with regard to habitual behaviors. Ding, ding, ding. We are all creatures of habit, people. And remember, too, we've discussed how they can utilize social media and our interaction with our devices to tell a lot about us, because typically we are habitual creatures. We usually get up at the same time. We usually have the same routine. Take a leak. If there's a nice way to say it, get a coffee. Go to your phone, your PC, clickety-click, see if anything happened last night, and then get your day started. And when you vary your routine, that sometimes can be a red light that something is awry. It doesn't have to be a major life issue. It could be anything, but it typically is a red light to say that something is different. And if somewhere we're monitoring your daily behavior, that would put the eye of Sauron on you for the next 24, 48 hours. See how easy this could work? And if they had you monitored for your behavior, remember we had a long discussion about behavioral monitoring back already 6, 8, 10 months, maybe even a year ago. But behavioral algorithms, something that already have been in development for a very long time. And these pieces of software that can determine whether or not you have a mental illness based upon your voice patterns are doing things just as that. But listen to this. So the findings reported this week in the journal Nature Neuroscience sheds new light on internal decision-making processes, particularly with regard to habitual behaviors, and help target the brain circuitry for implanting to treat such neuropsychiatric disorders as anxiety, depression, and, oh, what's addiction? Remember, there is a whole addiction section to the new 21st Century Cures Law. It's very scary. If we can measure a decision in real time, which I believe they have, we can potentially also manipulate it, says the study's senior author, Jonathan Wallace. They can manipulate it. A UC Berkeley neuroscientist and professor of psychology. For example, a device could be used that detects when an addict is about to choose a drug and instead bias their brain activity towards a healthier choice. Shh, you don't want that, Johnny. Look over there and pay attention to the new shiny bauble, and it's better for you. Here, let me give you something that'll push some of your chemical buttons to make you want me more. Located behind the eyes, just like I said, the orbital frontal cortex plays a key role in decision making. Ding, ding. This is why Google wants in there so bad, guys. They want to literally be able to manipulate your actions. And they want to be able to see how you're thinking. They want to be able to tap into real time where you're going, what you want. This is going to be a future way for them to get access to your thoughts for a personal digital assistant. Remember, that was another thing. They've really been out there. You know, Microsoft has been working on Taybot. Tay that went a little crazy on Twitter. And I just saw recently, though I don't think I read too much into it, I thought Microsoft quietly released a new one that they were working on. But located behind the eyes, the orbital frontal cortex plays a key role in decision-making, and when damaged, can lead to poor choices and impulsivity. And while previous studies have linked activity in the orbital frontal cortex to making final decisions, this is the first to track the neural changes that occur during deliberations between different options. So they are actually seeing the decision-making process in action. Imagine how much money Google could sell access to those statistics from real-time living people just through a contact lens. It's a thought. I don't know if they could do something like that, but if they had some sort of scanning that they could build into the backside of those contact lenses to be able to peer directly, however they're doing this, into the brains of monkeys, it would be possible. Oh, and it's electrodes. We can now see decisions unfolding in real time and make predictions about their choices, says Wallace. So this could be pre-crime 101. They'll know before you ever commit a crime. They're going to be able to tell with an 89% accuracy that you are going to go off the deep end, Johnny, in about 37 seconds. This is going to be Minority Report. Oh, my goodness. Measuring the signals from electrodes implanted in the poor little monkeys' brains, Wallace and fellow researchers tracked the primates' neural activity as they weighed the pros and cons of images that delivered different amounts of juice. Remember, when we've talked about the brain and why this is so frightening in the past, one of the things that I've kind of brought out there is the fact that, you know, my brain is where I do all my thinking. It's where I weigh my ethical dilemmas between what's right and what's not right, where I decide where that line in the sand is between the light and dark, and where I'll venture to and where I won't. And I'm not going to say that things I think about necessarily are going to conform to any law or any type of social nicety, that's for sure. I have things I think, and then I have things I do. But things I think don't have to be politically correct to help me make a decision. So as they are able to start reading thoughts and decision processes, where's that going to leave us? Are we going to be able to be punished for having a sin of thought, word, and deed? The thought, it's all about the thought. Just because you think about it in the process of decision making doesn't mean that you are a bad person. It doesn't mean that you necessarily ever even considered that as a choice. Just as one of the many possible choices that exist on the table. A computational algorithm tracked the monkey's orbital frontal cortex activity as they looked at looked from one image to another, determining which picture would yield the greater reward. And yeah, it's all about the dopamine. And the shifting brain patterns enabled researchers to predict which image the monkeys would settle on. For the experiment, they presented a monkey with a series of four different images of abstract shapes, each of which delivered to the monkey a different amount of juice. And they used a pattern recognition algorithm known as the linear discriminant analysis to identify from the pattern of neural activity which picture the monkey was looking at. The more the monkeys needed to think about the option, particularly when there was not much difference in the amount of juice, the more the neural patterns would switch back and forth. And now we can see when the brain is considering a particular choice. We could potentially use that signal to electrically stimulate the neural circuits involved in the decision and actually change their final choice, says Wallace. Aaron Rich, a researcher at the Helen Willis Neuroscience Institute at UC Berkeley, is lead author on the study. And the research was funded by grants from the National Institute on Drug Abuse and the National Institute of Where? Oh, good old Tommy Incel's alma mater, the National Institute of Mental Health. Sorry, guys, I'm a little tongue-twisty this morning. All right, invading the brain to understand repair and cognition. Cognitive neuroscience study. So this is even before the 21st Century Cures Act, another one. People are using brain-machine interfaces to restore motor function in ways we never thought possible. Again, this all started as DARPA research, being able to do brain implants to be able to control a prosthetic device that has touch and feel. And all they had to do is think about it and it'll move. To restore motor function in ways never thought before possible through limb prosthetics and exoskeletons, technologies to repair cognition has been even more elusive. And that is rapidly changing with tools from fully implantable brain devices to neuron eavesdropping grids, ding, 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 atop the brain to directly probe the mind. These technologies are mapping new understandings of cognition and advancing efforts to improve memory in those poor patients with cognitive deficits. Yeah. Notice how cognitive deficits is a very broad term, and that definition is still evolving of what a cognitive deficit is. People are using brain-machine interfaces to restore motor function. These new technologies being presented at the Cognitive Neuroscience Society Annual Conference in New York City are mapping new understandings of cognition and advanced efforts to improve memory and learning in patients with cognitive deficits. A new era of electrophysiology is now upon us, says Yosef Pezrevi of Stanford University, who is chairing the symposium. We have gotten a much sharper view of the brain's electropsychological activity using techniques once only relegated to where, oh yes, science fiction. You know, how many times has that phrase come up in these stories over the last few months? I mean, we really are in Twilight Zone world now, guys. And it's anything goes. Anything you could possibly think of, they probably are already working on. We read a story last week about the little new tiny implantable microcoils in the brain to activate neurons via a little mini magnetic field. We also saw that scientists were able to wirelessly control the brains of scampering lab mice with a wireless optogenetics tool using those little flashes of light. Well, let's continue because I have a whole ton of stories I want to whip through today. High-speed electronics pump now mimics neural signaling. An organic electronic ion pump has six small outlets that release neurotransmitters at high speeds. This device is placed next to a Swedish coin for size comparison, and it is absolutely tiny. To date, researchers have been unable to mimic that speedy chemical signaling, not even with microfluids, but now a team at Linköping, we've run into them before, Linköping University in Sweden, has designed and created an electrically controlled ion pump able to deliver neurotransmitters at close to the same speed as live neurons. Ding, ding. I.e., ripe for implanting. This new device is an approved version of an older organic electronic ion pump created by the same lab. It relies on electric fields to move charged particles across a thin film without requiring the flow of any liquid. Instead of going laterally through several millimeters of film, we are now using the thinness of the film, but going vertically through it just a couple hundred nanometers. And the way it works is an electrical current pushes neurotransmitters along six horizontal pathways, and they make their way to a chosen destination. So if they're sending neurotransmitters, this is able to manipulate brain chemicals. In addition to expanding our ability to studying neuronal signaling, this technique opens the door, here we go, to the development of brain implants that could speedily deliver neurotransmitters, ding, ding, ding. And in the future, this pump could be adapted to augment, ding, today's brain electrical stimulation therapies, such as deep brain stimulation for epilepsy, with chemical treatments. And there is a whole new world of opportunity to address those pesky neurodegenerative disorders that have a very broad definition with the actual compounds that the body is not signaling properly with. So, hey, don't worry about it. We'll push that dopamine button for you. Ding, ding, ding. Every single time you're getting low, let your little implant do the work. So check this one out. This is another one. This came out November 9th, and I've had these queued up for quite a while. Cellophane-like implant records from both the surface and the interior of the human brain. Out of IEEE spectrum, a new implant that could be draped over the brain like plastic wrap has been successfully used to simultaneously monitor the activity of broad swaths of the brain and individual neurons, providing effectiveness in early trials with human patients on the operating table. Researchers report in Science Advances that the new technology called a NeuroGrid could improve treatment and surgery for epilepsy patients. The CDC's 2013 estimate says about 2.9 million people in the United States have active epilepsy, ding, ding, i.e., there's a huge base that might step right up for this technology, so this could be profitable. 2.9 million people in the United States that have a seizure-inducing brain disorder, and about one in a third of these people have drug-resistant epilepsy, according to Johns Hopkins. And in these cases, doctors can only try to cut out parts of the brain where the seizures begin. How horrifying. But it's challenging to pinpoint the targets to prepare for surgery. Ugh, this is horrifying. Doctors typically keep their patients in the hospital to monitor suspected parts of the brain for several days or weeks. And often, this monitoring process that causes them to have the seizures, this monitoring process of where they have the seizures, often requires opening up the skull and implanting an electrode grid that fits over the surface of the brain. However, this electrocorticography, ECOG technology, has previously only recorded broad patterns of activity from regions of the brain. Getting precise readings from individual brain cells was thought to only be possible with penetrating electrodes that are inserted into brain tissue. Oh my God, guys. I'm telling you, human experimentation has been given a fire. They are looking now at trying this stuff on people. Georgie Bazuki, a neuroscientist at NYU's Lengo Medical Center and a co-author of the new paper, has been working on a better technology for years. In 2015, research published in Nature Neuroscience, he and his colleagues created an electrode grid that is as clingy as plastic wrap and that can monitor the activity of both single neurons and groups of neurons. And that prior study, researchers tested the neural grid in rodents, and the new study tried the tech out on humans for the very first time. Neurosurgeons temporarily placed the implants in 5 people undergoing brain surgery to measure the technology's performance. And this first human trial, first ever, is a big step forward, Buzuki says. And while the brains of rodents and humans are fundamentally the same, in some ways, electricity is electricity. He says that this is providing proof that this new technology is safe and reliable, but it requires careful testing. This neural grid has 10 electrodes, and there's a single wire that connects it to a lone silicone chip outside of the brain that then acts as an amplifier, and the chip compresses a signal and then sends them via wire to a computer for analysis. With the setup, researchers found they could successfully detect when individuals' neuron fired, which gave them a more precise information about where the activity was happening. And according to this, chop out chunks of the brain. Oh, it's horrifying. All right, and last but not least, Frankenstein effect. Dormant memories can now be revived with a magnetic pulse to the brain. Yeah, for those poor people, those dementia patients who can't even recall the most recent memories may be able to one day revive them with a zap of magnetic energy to the brain. The notion of working memory has to do with the part of the brain which allows human beings to retain new information. But don't worry about it, because we have new ways to maybe bring this back. They introduced transcranial magnetic stimulation with an electromagnetic coil held to the forehead and used it to fire a pulse of energy to the brain. When we did that, we saw a brief reactivation of the unattended memory, and it was brought back into the focal attention. They have now called this process the Frankenstein effect in the lab. All right, guys, make sure you stick around, because it is Tuesday. All kinds of new and live radio tonight. Live up next, Lonnie Clark, and I will catch up with you tomorrow.
My name is S.M. Gibbs.